listener production.
Hi, this is Paul McIntyre. Welcome to the MI3 Audio Edition. I've been a business journalist for 25 years covering the marketing, media, agency and tech sectors. In this series, we talk to industry leaders about the global and local developments that you need to be across this week. Well, if you haven't been living under a rock for the past couple of weeks, you would have noticed Meta lit up the Australian government and the media sector with an announcement that was pulling news off its platforms and pulling out of the Media Bargaining Code, a world first piece of legislation that forced Meta and Google to pay news publishers for their content on those platforms. Circa $200 million a year is the figure accepted broadly by industry on those secret deals. All the panelists in today's conversation, big media and independents, were recipients of big tech dollars via the bargaining code, although there's been some musical chairs since. But Meta's announcement has triggered a firestorm of debate. Perhaps the most significant, which has not yet found its way into the centre of the current rage, is that if the federal government uses a mechanism in the media bargaining code which would force recalcitrants, i.e. Meta, into negotiations and a financial deal by an independent arbitrator, Meta could pull its Facebook and Instagram apps from Australia altogether rather than pay up. That obviously has quite profound implications for this market, and many believe it is entirely plausible. But let's get to what is certain to be a rip-roaring discussion between two of the biggest media companies in the country and a couple of smaller independents with some, shall we say, robust viewpoints on the current street fight with big tech. And an additional surprise guest on the mics today is Paul Fletcher, the former communications minister and co-architect of the news bargaining code in the coalition government. News Corp's executive chairman, Michael Miller, also joins us, along with Nine Publishing Managing Director, Tory Maguire, private media CEO, Will Hayward, and Chris Jans, CEO of Capital Brief. Chris, if you don't know, was in Tory's chair at Nine when the media bargaining code deals were being struck, and he's been advising media companies internationally on the Australian legislation in Europe, North America, and New Zealand, which in recent weeks, of course, has seen TV broadcasters and publishers take to deep layoffs and restructures. Indeed, New Zealand's bleak picture is what Australia's media future could look like without some form of competition legislation around big tech and media, or more specifically, journalism, and we'll get to the panel on that. Let's start with this possible future in New Zealand, which might be trailblazing at the moment. Chris Jans, is it bleak? Why? And welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Well, if you want to see what happens if a government sits on their hands rather than act with haste, you need look no further than across the ditch, because in the past couple of weeks, almost half of all TV news jobs have been wiped out. Local news media is jumping up and down and openly saying they're on the verge of collapse. Legislation there has been on the table for a couple of years, ever since the Australian legislation was introduced, but it hasn't been strongly supported by the current government, the current minister, the current PM. And in my view, it shouldn't take an extinction event for government to realise the importance of journalism in our democracy, the need for support when traditional funding models have really been upended.
Paul Fletcher, your perspective on this, you are obviously, as we said at the top, co-architect of what we've seen in Australia with the media bargaining code. Chris says that it's nothing there, and this is what could be before us if it doesn't happen. Do you have a take on this?
I guess the main point I'd make is that when we proceeded to legislate the news media bargaining code, it really followed a lot of policy work. The digital platforms inquiry that then Treasurer Scott Morrison had commissioned, which ran through 2018-19, a lot of ongoing dialogue between the then government and all of the news media businesses. So these are things I think governments need to be watching and staying engaged on, or else it can all, you know, come up at you quite quickly without you being properly prepared for it. I think that's a policy risk. And it is important to say, you know, the public policy interest, as opposed to the private interests of participants, goes to the competition issues, the importance of a diverse media sector, and the importance of a diverse media sector in a liberal democracy.
What I'm really keen to do now is ask each of you your top line positions on the current state with Meta and an assessment on the media bargaining code impact overall since its inception. Chris, where you think the current state is and the impact of the code?
I think the code was a great first step and its impact is undeniable. It injected north of $200 million a year into the country's newsrooms. And that's just fantastic. But it was never meant to be a silver bullet. It was never meant to solve the future of journalism. It addressed a competition issue, as Paul said. It was addressed just one of nine recommendations in the ACCC's report. And it's also brought some unintended consequences. No one meant No one intended to give Meta the power to pick winners and losers in news media, further entrenching their influence. No one intended for them to be able to flip the switch on a bloody day in journalism. And, you know, we're facing a pretty bloody day if these funding hole isn't filled in some way. And no one intended for it to introduce barriers to entry for new participants in journalism, making it more difficult for new journalism businesses to launch. The current government made a commitment, an election commitment, that they would deliver a program that looked beyond the code, secure the future of journalism. Now we're in an even worse position, and the wheels on that process are turning fairly slowly, and the clock is counting down not just to the Meta expiry, but also to the next election. So I think we urgently need a longer-term program that considers the whole ecosystem, really looks forward, including journalism startups, with my selfish hat on, and avoids kicking the can down the road and facing a pretty bleak future.
Michael Miller, what's your assessment now on in terms of what Meta's done and the Media Bargaining Code impact overall?
The Media Bargaining Code is more important now due to the introduction of generative AI and that the ever-shifting sands of how media has traditionally been funded. And that if you look at the background to the Media Bargaining Code, it was that there was an imbalance of bargaining power and that the essence behind the code was that they found that there were tech companies profiting from the work of others, in this case journalists. They were restricting the ability of other businesses to grow, in Meta's case, the deprioritizing, the hiding and the unpopulating of their Facebook tab, which they've now announced that they're going to drop, as well as their refusal to negotiate in good faith, contrary to the laws of the Australian Parliament. And that the code, we're seeing all of that occur right now, and the code was designed to address that. What we've now seen, though, is that the code in many ways has been surpassed by events that are happening around the world, particularly in Canada, and that with the exclusion of Canadian trusted news content from all, not just publishers, but media companies, in Canada, Canadians are not able to access local, community, trusted, not just news and information, but it's about your local sports results. It's not just about publishers, growing and finding an audience. It's about the companies, organizations, the fashion brands, the restaurants, the schools, the councils that need to communicate important information, and that this will take time to see the true impact. But as a result, Canada will be a poorer nation for the lack of local news that Meta, given their, in Australia's numbers, 92% of the population access every single month that do not have a social media competitor. I fear that what replaces that news in Australia will be unverified, untrusted, unchecked, not just fake, but misleading news, which will lead Australians to make poorer decisions and ultimately will make what is one of the world's oldest and strongest democracies weaker. That's where the code is now more important than what was when it was introduced.
Just a very quick top take then on the impact of the code overall since its inception. It's been a good thing clearly for some media companies. How do you feel about the arguments that say it hasn't benefited every media company, particularly in independents? But the overall impact is what?
Well, the overall impact is that it has given, for those companies that have reinvested, it has given them stronger businesses. It has given them better talent. It's able to retain talent and that in some cases invest in the technology required to meet new audiences. And that those who have reinvested that money back into a better business, that is what is ultimately going to be making our industry stronger, but also the communities they serve stronger. You exit that and you end up with a weaker position.
Tory Maguire, welcome. You are running Nine Publishing, new to the chair, so I'm guessing that there's a little bit of what have I done here catching up, but I'm sure you're across it as the previous on the editorial side, but welcome. And what's your top line positions on that? What is Nine's publishing?
I agree with Chris that the code itself was the first step in what needs to be a long process that will really never end. I don't think we'll ever be in a situation where we can just go, okay, we've nailed it, it's settled, it's all sorted. What it allowed us to do, which Michael just rested on, was invest into areas of our business to prepare ourselves for what was coming in the display market and, you know, with cookie deprecation and all that, all those headwinds coming at the industry, we invested the money that we got out of the deal thanks to Chris's negotiations. And in fact, it wasn't out of the deal. It was, you know, out of the code. It was before the code was needed to be enacted into growth areas specifically targeted at subscription revenue. And, right. you know, our half-year results that we just delivered indicate that that was a very good investment. But there is still a long way to go. So we are still buffeted by the same headwinds as every other publisher is. But we are in a stronger position because we are accelerating our progress towards being reader funded. We have been able to do that because we have focused really heavily on the quality of our journalism, but then also making sure that we're presenting it properly and distributing it properly and charging for it properly. And that was the impact for us. But I do agree overall, there is some inequity in how those deals were put together. And we don't really know how the code's going to perform because the code hasn't actually had to be implemented yet. All those deals were done with the threat of implementing it.
Will Hayward, CEO of Private Media. Crikey's probably your best known media asset, but your position on this probably slightly different, I think, Will, to what we've heard so far, unless, you know, you've had a change of mind.
It is somewhat different. So I think it's important we come back to the AI issue. So I just want to put a pin in that because I do think it is something quite materially different. In terms of what was good with the bargaining code, it was obviously great to see $200 million come into the ecosystem. That is sort of an unqualified good thing. It was quick and it did resolve some sense from many people, these big technology platforms are not paying enough into the communities in which they operate. So that was what was good. Other than that, I think the code is sort of an extraordinarily bad piece of legislation. The idea that funding of public interest journalism could be outsourced to technology executives at foreign-owned businesses to negotiate in confidential contracts behind closed doors, to me, is obviously a bad thing. Like, that is not how we want to support public interest journalism in Australia. I think it's important is that we look forward from here. I mean, to a certain extent, I'm sort of receptive to this notion that it was an important first step. And I can see ways forward where perhaps the code is expanded. And I know we'll get onto that. But I think it's really important that as we think about the future, we reflect on the shortfalls of the code. And we're just honest about the fact that everyone in this room, except Tory perhaps, ended up in a room with some executive who doesn't really have any connection with news, negotiating about what the value of that news was without any real kind of sense of what that value exchange could look like. I'm not surprised that Meta have backed down. I'm not here to sort of defend any decisions they have made. But I think the moment we saw this legislation spreading to other markets, it was very, very predictable that Meta would just say, well, look, 70 million in Australia, sure, maybe, like, let's sort of kick that can down the road. But once it started popping up in Canada and other markets, they start doing the maths on the 150 or so markets they operate in, and it just doesn't represent a sustainable system for them. So I'm not a fan of the code. I think it's important we look forward from here. And I think that work needs to start now.
Well, Paul Fletcher, you get to respond to that one as well as the broader picture, I guess, because it's good sequence. First to, you know, the criticism around the code that, you know, you ushered in, Paul.
I guess the first thing I'd say is when Will says, well, you know, we shouldn't have been talking to the executives of foreign tech companies and explaining them to the value of the value of news. The obvious question is, you know, does he want to suggest another source for the funding? You know, politicians get no shortage of people coming in suggesting that the taxpayer should pay for things. Our view was that this was, first of all, it was based in a solid policy foundation, which is about the competition impacts of the market power of Google and Facebook. And that was very important. That differentiated the Australian approach from the approach, say, in some of the European markets where they'd sought to use copyright law and it hadn't worked. So that was important. And just to respond to something Tori said, when she said, oh, we haven't really seen the code tested, I disagree with that quite strongly. We've seen the code having the effect that it's had. That money would not have flowed into the industry were it not for that code being legislated. But it's also important that there was strong engagement by the Prime Minister, by the Treasurer, certainly by me as Communications Minister. And I do think that that will need to be part of the way forward for the current government. There is a sense, I think, that, look, one thing I will agree with Will on is I don't think this move by Meta was particularly surprising, but what is troubling is that the current government does seem to have been caught by surprise. And one of the features of the way the code worked and the dynamics around it was obviously, you know, Michael and his people, Chris and his people, you know, Will and others, lots of people were talking to Meta, to Google, and certainly there was lots of government talking to those players. And I think that was part of the reason it achieved the outcomes it did. And I think there needs to be a more proactive engagement from the current government.
Sorry, Paul, to be clear, I meant that we hadn't seen what the mechanism, how it's going to play out if the levers available to the government under the code have to be pulled.
Yeah, so if we haven't seen the impact of designation, for instance, Tory is one example. Yeah. So, Paul, can I just ask you, though, let's go for a hypothetical. Let's say you were still communications minister in the government. Would you look at the current media bargaining code and say, yes, it needs to develop and move on to some of the arguments that have been made by several panelists here about broadening it out? Would you be receptive to that? Would you do that?
I'm going to be reasonably cautious in what I say, amongst other reasons, because, you know, I'm no longer the communication spokesman for the coalition. That's David Coleman, who's doing an excellent job. So I think I'll just confine myself to saying one of the success factors in what we were able to achieve, which no other government had achieved, was the close engagement from the Prime Minister down. And I certainly think that's something we need to see more of. We've seen most of the talking coming from the Assistant Treasurer right now. I think that's a problem. I think we need to see the Treasurer more involved in it, for example. You know, getting outcomes from these giant platforms takes a lot of work and a lot of focus from all the players involved, including government.
Do you think that the government should look at broadening the media bargaining code as it stands today as part of its agenda and remit?
Well, I think what they need to be doing is engaging pretty closely on the immediate trigger issue, which is what Meta has said, and working out pretty clearly what their plan is in response. I hope they are working very closely with the ACCC, given the importance of advice from the ACCC to the Treasurer before a decision to designate is made. And again, one of the success factors, or one of the reasons that we had the success we did, was because it was based upon the detailed work and analysis that the ACCC had done. So I certainly hope that they are charging the ACCC with working closely on this and providing updated advice to the Treasurer and the government.
On the basis of the ACCC, let's just have a hypothetical here, Paul, that the ACCC does recommend that to the Treasurer. Should the Treasurer designate Meta?
That, to me, is a pretty logical next step. The only caveat I would add to that is that an important part of the success we had was in the dialogue that was occurring between the government and Facebook at the very highest levels. And I think that factor is something that it would be good to see present now.
Will Hayward, let's go to you on this one. Should the government designate Meta? What could that look like? And then what if Meta exits Australia altogether rather than negotiate and pay? Are we looking at a bit of carnage? What's your thoughts on this?
So if we just play out the designation saga a little bit, or sort of look at the different scenarios. So there's sort of three audiences when I think about designation. There's the bigger media companies, there's the independent media companies, and then there's the wider small business ecosystem of Australia, which is obviously critical. It represents about 50% of GDP and about 70% of total Australians work for companies with fewer than 200 employees. So on big media, I mean, look, Michael will be able to give the insider's view on this, and as will Tory, and Chris can maybe reach into his memories to give a view. My view is that big media is not particularly worried about designation. You take out Facebook, you take out Instagram, it's inconvenient. I don't think anyone's issuing any profit warnings off the back of that. But it doesn't look like a bad scenario for big media companies. I think there's even a bull case on designation for big media companies. So if you can really agitate this, if you can really draw the Prime Minister into it, as Paul clearly would like to, maybe you can get Facebook, maybe you can get Meta booted out of the country. And that's a lot of ad revenue that's got to go somewhere. Maybe the situation looks even better for big media.
It might also look good for you too, though, Will, if that happens, by the way. That's
not really. I mean, we don't make much money from the sort of mass advertising that Facebook really engages in. So Crikey makes about 98% of its revenue from subscriptions, and their other two products are very niche focused and they largely involve creating content. So I don't think, I would love to claim some of that revenue. I certainly will be telling the sellers if Facebook leaves that the numbers go up, but I don't know if I'd tell the chairman that's going to happen. On independent media, Facebook currently drives less traffic than Reddit, less traffic than Twitter. So we're not super concerned. So on a business level, I'm not concerned. Personally, I'm very concerned. Designation would be potentially disastrous for Australia. It wouldn't be disastrous for big companies. When you look at the creative sector, when you look at the small businesses in Australia, if Facebook removes news, that's very bad for the independent media companies, the small ones. But if it withdraws entirely, which is what some people seem to be somewhat sort of agitating towards, that will be very bad for small businesses. The vast majority of small businesses use Facebook advertising tools. So I think I would caution government to behave responsibly. I'm not advocating that we shouldn't expect these technology businesses to pay into the communities that they draw so much from, but I do not think designation in the bargaining code is the right way to go about it.
Michael Miller, should the treasurer designate? Probably I'll take a punt on your answer on that one, but I guess the next question is, what if Meta exits Australia altogether? Is that on your radar? Have you been in scenario mapping for that? And what happens? Would it be carnage? Do you agree with Will, for instance?
Well, there's aspects I agree that with Will regarding the process, but I just want to mind kind of just recapping what the process is. That first of all, the government need to ask the ACCC to refresh the assumptions that they made in 2020, and that it's important that the government is diligent in the process they follow. Otherwise, I think they are opening up themselves and for all of us, the ability for Meta to question the assumptions they make. So the ACCC will update their paper, and they'll find that in some cases Meta maybe have introduced or moved more content off Facebook onto Instagram, they're growing substantially their news channels on WhatsApp. They've launched Threads, and that they will find that while TikTok have entered the market, that the total share for Meta and the total reach and the total consumption, and I'm happy to talk to those figures from the Ipsos report from January, have actually grown. And that we've all signed confidentiality, so we're unable to tell our engagement levels with Meta. But that, you know, depending on how the ACCC approaches, they will find that out. The government will then receive that report, and that they will then ask for responses to that report, which we'll all submit to. We'll all give our own views. Meta will give their views as well, which would lead then to the government finally getting to a position where they could designate. The scenario which I do agree with Will and others' comments, is that the government could have foreshadowed what has happened since the news media bargaining code was introduced into Australia, that we've seen what's happened in Canada. And so what does that scenario look like? And they could have preempted that. They could have prepared for that. And I think that most publishers have been assuming that will be the outcome. So I have said that I'm not surprised by the decision of Meta, but I do feel, agreeing with Paul, that parliamentarians and politicians at all levels could be doing more to protect democracies within their communities and that right of free speech, that public interest journalism, which is at risk. And public interest journalism isn't just the actual reporting, it's the diversity of reporting. It's the number of different voices that the market will be able to sustain should there not be the investment in journalism. Again, I come to the history of Facebook. This is 20 years that they have been conditioning Australians, conditioning users. And if you go back 20 years, you are invited to join a news group. They were the origins of and interest groups, often populated by news. And so they've built their business not just on the journalism of news companies, but the concepts, the debates, the community issues that they were raised, and that's what they've conditioned Australians to, that they're now threatening, as they've done in Canada, to take away. And that is where that risk is emerging. News needs to be discoverable. The ACCC found that Meta was an unavoidable trading partner, and that there was an imbalance in being able to reach audiences, not just for advertising, but also for subscribers, for eyeballs, and that was what was going to be taken away. And that is, that's the poor outcome, which ultimately we're going to be left with should they follow Canada and pull out. But I feel we've got in a position, we know that movie now, and that we could therefore not let Meta again abuse a market power where they are actually restricting not just businesses' growth due to their dominant position they have within the market, but also the risk they play and they pose for Australians in not be having access to that news and vital information. And it's the diversity of it and the differing views we all may have.
So, Michael, let's say the government designates Meta or Facebook. What's your sense on their response to that? You know, Will argues that they'll be out, or they could well be tempted to pull out of Australia altogether. Do you think that's a possibility? Is it plausible? And would that be something that would be okay by News Corp if they did?
I would prefer them to come back to the table. I think there are a number of things that they need to weigh up in terms of pulling out of the country. The ACCC estimated their revenue out of Australia is 4.3 to 5.2 billion. That was in 2022. Their reported accounts in 2022 were 1.2 billion. Yes, there's a gap of 2 to 3 billion of unpaid taxes in that amount. So that would be the first concern. I think that there's also questions that are rightly raised in the past week in terms of e-safety, online harm. And these are every politician needs to be raising that. And I've observed the Human Rights Commission in the past week say that last year there were nearly 32 million cases of online harm reported. 85% of those came from Meta.
I'll get to Tori now. I just want to ask you on that, Paul Fletcher, because you're of the view when you were dealing with Meta in that e-safety legislation, I think you say that they were quite difficult to deal with or to negotiate with.
Yes, they certainly were difficult to deal with. They, along with other large platforms, said that our proposal to introduce the Online Safety Act was unnecessary, the e-safety commissioner was unnecessary. We went ahead and did it. We went through a careful process. And in fact, it has given now Australians who are subject to, for example, online bullying, a means of having that resolved that wasn't possible before. But it's part of the standard playbook of these giant US digital corporations to always be resistant to legislative proposals in countries like Australia, smaller countries, say it's not necessary, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the lessons of the last 10 or 15 years are, when the democratically elected parliament makes laws, if they're well designed and well thought through, and if you've gone through proper process, and Michael makes a good point about that and the importance of the ACCC in gathering facts and giving all affected stakeholders a chance to comment, then you can pass laws that the big platforms will comply with.
Tori, if Meta decides to withdraw, not pay, and pulls from the market altogether from Australia, what's your sense on what happens? The carnage, the upside for different companies?
There's two levels of them pulling out though, right? There's the full-scale, leave their $5 billion on the table and exit, which seems like a very extreme outcome. But then there's the much more plausible result, which is the Canadian style pull out, which is to pull out of news. And like Will, I have a personal view and a professional view on this. My professional view is that we are probably in a better position to weather something like that than a lot of other publishers. Although across our group of companies, there are websites that are not subscription and are more exposed to social traffic than we are. It would have impact on us in the fact that it is, as Michael said, it's a top of the funnel play, isn't it? Like it's about getting our brand in front of people and making people aware of what we're doing to get them to us, to then it's our job to build a relationship with them. But my personal view is that it would be disastrous because of the misinformation and disinformation situation that we would end up in. If you can't put proper journalism written by the journalists employed by the people on this podcast onto social media, very, very quickly, it will become a bin fire. And that's proven out in Canada. And I think it would be very dangerous for us to be in that situation as a nation where people who are so reliant and, that one of the two biggest indicators of Meta's market power is the way they have manipulated the use of news on their platforms to win this argument. I mean, they created the news tab to kill the news tab to pretend that people on Facebook don't read news. But we know that millions and millions of Australians every week are actually interacting with news on that platform. And if they can't put proper journalism on there when they are trying to make a point or they're trying to have a debate or they're trying to, you know, demonstrate what their values and ideology are to people, God knows what's going to go on there. And I think it would be a nightmare.
Will, your position is that you think it's likely that if Facebook is designated, they will pull from the Australian market because the global precedent for Europe and North America is way too expensive for them to keep doing this. Have I got that right? Is that what your sense is?
No. I believe if you check transcript, what I'll say is that some people seem to be agitating for the most extreme version, which is Facebook leaves. But since you give me the mic back, I just wanted to take the liberty of asking Paul a question. I mean, the Liberals are obviously a fan of the free market. We set up this legislation. We required Meta to pay for the news that it seems to benefit from. Is Meta entitled to say, and this is a genuine question, is Meta entitled to say, I do not want to pay that money? It doesn't represent fair value.
So again, it comes down to being a piece of competition policy first and foremost. Just as there is competition law that applies to the position of the big supermarkets and there's a code that regulates their dealing with suppliers, just as there's competition law that applies to the telcos and how Telstra deals with the other telcos, the smaller so-called access seekers. Competition law dealing with the prices that the airports can charge airlines, gas pipelines, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I understand the question in saying, well, why would you have interference in the free market? But the answer is that both in the Australian economy, but in the US economy with antitrust laws, there's been a long tradition of looking at markets and analysing whether they fall so far short of being competitive that there is then a case for policy intervention. So that is the basis on which we took that decision. And again, that's why the role of the ACCC as our competition regulator was such a critical part of this.
Chris Jans, you've heard the rest of the panelists on their positions on this. I just want to go straight to, if Meta is designated and pulls from the market, what's your sense on that? Will they do that because of the international precedent it sets in other markets, or is there another scenario you think will play out?
I've learnt not to predict anything Meta's going to do because the most rational, logical path isn't necessarily the path they'll follow. But I'd say it'd be true to form for them to attempt to hold the government to ransom and say, hey, we're worth 80% of your GDP. Your laws don't apply to us. We'll do what you want. And I think the implications for small business then and the storm that would erupt are real. I think, frankly, Will, it's laughable that, and Michael and Tory can't say it, but it's laughable to suggest News and Nine would benefit from a Meta withdrawal. It would be handing a virtual small business ad monopoly to Google. And the flow and effects from that are really real too. So, you know, we're left with a pretty tough situation. The government can't bleak. You can't turn around and say, hey, if you are of enormous size and scale and not afraid to throw your toys out of the pram and unless we do things your way, then you can operate however you want in this country. But, you know, if they did withdraw from Australia, it would shut down this conversation in many other markets as a result. And it's, I think, real concern and shows the need for broader policy here as well.
The global precedent is real if it happens in Australia?
Well, all eyes are on Australia. I think there are two markets in the world that everyone globally in publishing are watching, and it's Australia and Canada, and Australia more so, I would say. The interest with what's going on here is intense throughout Europe, the Americas, and Asia, and South Africa, I'd add. Like, it's truly global precedent that's been set, and it's been set because the outcomes were excellent. Like, this was good government policy. It delivered a great outcome. Michael touched on earlier that the environments continue to change and evolve, and you need to keep pace with policy settings that respond to that.
So you say great outcomes, Chris, but obviously great outcomes for some, and I think this is where we just move quickly, if we can, to perhaps what happens beyond the current framework of the bargaining code and who has rights and who can argue for some funds. Do you think there needs to be some alternatives to the media bargaining code that broaden the diversity that we see in journalism and news reporting and beyond? And what could that look like, and should it be on the government's agenda?
I wouldn't say alternatives. I'd say additional measures, because the reality is the bargaining imbalance that exists between Facebook, Google and news publishers hasn't gone away. If anything, it has intensified. So I think there are additional measures that should be considered on top of the News Media Bargaining Code. And they are measures, as I said earlier, there were 8 other recommendations in the Digital Platforms report from the ACCC. There are measures that could be taken that improve media diversity in this country, encourage new entrants, support new entrants. That doesn't mean it's an either-or scenario. It should be in addition to.
But beyond the current code, some other mechanisms and frameworks to work with that don't extend or expand the code in any way. Is that what you're suggesting?
I think legislation shouldn't sit still. You should always consider ways to improve what's in market. But if you look at the outcome, there is no other country in the world that has had an injection of the size and scale into its journalism market than what's happened in Australia. And it was because Australia was first to the table here with groundbreaking legislation. There's a misconception it was a quick process. It was a long and tortuous process. And in that time, thousands of journalists lost their jobs. And, you know, eventually we got in the room. We wouldn't have been in the room without the code. So it's not a case of now that should disappear, a case of it should evolve.
I mean, just under the current terms, though, you know, at Capital Brief, you haven't had any funding, clearly. You started after the code started. But would you qualify, and I'm sure you would say yes when I ask you, would you want to qualify for some sort of funding that sort of pushes the business along, Chris?
Of course, naturally. Anything that we can access that moves us forward is great. But I think that's why, you know, the perspective that I bring here today is real. It's not out of vested interest. It is one that I have seen the benefits that this legislation has provided. So we shouldn't just throw it out and try again. It should evolve, and we should, yes, absolutely consider additional measures that support the broader ecosystem, but it's not one or the other.
Will, you're not happy with the code, but so what's the solution or an alternative that broadens the support, if you like?
So I'll steal Chris's phrase and bounce it back to him. I think saying the code has been a success is laughable. At the first renewal, one half of it has walked away. And from what I can gather from this call, nobody here thinks that Meta is going to come back to the table. So the code has failed. We need to either radically rethink it. I certainly agree that it needs to be expanded. I think there are more technology platforms should be paying in. But any reasonable bit of legislation, you would say, well, look, we think publishing just journalism needs additional support. We think the free market has failed it. We think it is very hard to do, but it also provides a service. And therefore, we're exploring ways to fund that. And the way the government would do it properly is by seeking additional income from technology companies, using that income to build some sort of fund that exists at arm's length from the government. And if it wants to, I mean, there is a very good mechanism for investing in public interest journalism in Australia, which is the ABC. But I think the code has failed. No one here seems to think the Meta is going to come back to the table. At the first renewal, it's fallen apart. So I think we need to look at an expanded version. I think the government should do it properly.
To Will's point, there are other funding models around the world. So taking us back to where we started in New Zealand, they have NZ On Air, which is available to all media companies, where the New Zealand Herald, Stuff and other non-broadcasters submit proposals from a fund that the government then funds sometimes annually, but they get reviewed every year from a panel to allocate money back to media on nation-building public interest journalism. And that it's not restricted to a existing set, that new emerging publishers can submit and they get funded for various initiatives. And so there are alternative funding methods around the world, and that as a result, their public broadcaster is ad funded, and that they compete in the market with other, it's just government owned.
Based on the current scenario there in New Zealand, though, Michael, it doesn't appear to be holding publishers up too well, given what we've seen in recent weeks, though.
I suppose there may be other underlying, not just market or lack of funding, looking at ownership. And I wouldn't necessarily draw a Meta comparison only and a funding comparison. I think it's a management, not necessarily a management, but an owner comparison as well. So I think you need to probably unpack what's happening in New Zealand. It's sad. It's concerning that there is a major news player that's no longer there. I suppose what I'm referring to is that there are alternative funding models that Australia has not reviewed for many years. The concept of designation and where that, you know, I think the original thinking behind designation was, is that Meta has not signed enough Australian publishers. So you go down the path of designation, and all the independent digital publishers that do not have a deal today were suddenly going to be in the frame. And that is what the government now have to consider in terms of the next iteration of the code, is how to ensure that new publishers, capital brief, what the threshold is to then for qualify. And that is where, you know, I think the intention of the code was that Meta have not played ball. And that is what designation could have enabled, a more vibrant news media industry.
Tori, in terms of a broadening of the code, you've sort of said it earlier on that you're personally, you know, empathetic to that, but at a business level and at an industry level, should it go broader and support diversity?
I think all of us would be in favour of the overall industry being healthier. So I agree that, you know, there is no downside for us or for Michael and his business in there being a healthy range of newsrooms in this country. And so I don't know, I have to admit, I don't know what mechanism you're talking about exactly for broadening the code. The thing that I'd be fascinated to see, if we do go down the designation path and we end up in some kind of arbitration, how we value the exchange, like what is the actual value exchange between a publisher and Meta that some centralized body would put a figure on? And I think that would be a very controversial. Oh, I'm glad to hear Michael's about to tell me.
Yes. Well, I mean, can I just say before that, I mean, your chairman, Tori, I think Peter Costello put about $600 million on Nine's valuation of what it's delivered. So
yeah,
that's a big number.
Like, that's our view. Yeah. But I'd love to know what, like, if there was a centralized body sort of working this out, how they would go about making that mechanism.
Paul, can I just jump in there? Because just to say a couple of things. Firstly, the whole structure of the code is to strongly encourage commercial deals, and that's what happened in the first round, which is why money was got into the sector quickly. Will dismisses it as a failure. One of the things you learn as a politician is that there's lots of people who reckon that you're all hopeless and they've got better ways of doing it. His better way of doing it seems to be more taxpayer funding, so good luck with that. What this successfully did was something that has not been achieved in any other market. But the whole point is, if the commercial deal isn't achieved, then the other pathway in the code is, first of all, designation, and then ultimately, so first commercial negotiation, mediation, then ultimately arbitration, with a specified process under which you appoint an arbitrator from a panel, and then each party makes an offer as to the value of the content, and the arbitrator chooses. So there is a quite specific process set out there in the code. Again, strong incentives for the players to do a deal commercially, but it's not like those issues haven't been thought about. And again, I'm not saying it's perfect, but there is a process there.
Michael.
Chris, you know, this is a football negotiation. Is it a
baseball?
Baseball. Yes. Baseball. That's the word.
What does that mean?
So what a baseball negotiation is that, you know, company A puts their offer in, company B puts their offer in, and the arbitrator chooses one of the offers. Not a midpoint.
No trade-off.
No trade-off. It is what, you know, I determined to be the closest offer. And that in this case, it stops someone either low-balling or going high-ball. And so that's the baseball offer. That you know, choose what you feel is the fair, the arbitrator chooses what they think is fairest of the two offers, not a medium.
Michael, what figure would you throw in there as a range? We've got 600 from Peter Costello, million,
yeah,
that is.
Yeah, that's a higher number. Yeah, which was that. I think in the industry, if you're talking about an industry figure in total, Meta suggest that 3% of Australians use their news tab. You can talk to that in a moment. But based on their global revenue, if you take 3% of that globally, it's $58 billion. So in Australia's case, if we are a portion of that, you're talking around a lot more than $600 million if you wanted to play with
that. At a sector level.
Yes.
Now, for all. And when you talk about that, and we are giving wiggle room here, Michael, this is the conversation is to get a sense on things. So, someone will hold it to you, but we'll find out. But that includes both, you know, the big publishers as well as independent media, and what we've heard from Will, that figure you're talking about covers that as well?
That's the global figure. That's right.
Yep.
Based on their numbers.
Yep. Chris Jans, you had some thoughts.
let's just be honest what has happened here. 3 years ago when these deals were struck, Facebook did not want to enter into a room where there would be two offers submitted and the value exchange would be discussed. It was a simpler, easier path with the for the broad industry, for them to say, oh, let's negotiate. And people came to commercial agreements. Since then, they have used their power to totally change the way news is consumed on their platform, to ramp up misinformation. And I'm certain now they'd come in with a different set of numbers that show a different set of values. But if you look at the point that this legislation was enacted, they were terrified of having that conversation, which is why deals were done.
Okay, Will, so what we just heard now, is that a more plausible scenario for you? And this is, we've got one more point to cover very quickly from everyone as the AI, but just a quick response from Will. Is there anything there that sounds more palatable to a feisty independent?
I still think we need to think about what happens once Meta leaves the news ecosystem. I think that is the most likely outcome. I can't envisage. I mean, the thing I dedicate my sort of working life to is funding the journalism for private media. So if Meta came back to the table and continued to provide money, even though I think the legislation is absurd, that would be good for private media. But I don't think that's going to happen. And so I think the most meaningful thing to talk about is what happens next, and to assume that Meta, as part of the code, is going to leave that.
Michael?
Can't give you an analogy that I'm a miner. I'm in the Pilbara. There is one train line between my mine and the coast. And that train operator says, I am no longer going to carry your resources. Not only that, is that I'm going to refuse to negotiate with you. You're out of business. And so what the code considered but didn't include is a must carry. And I think that's the scenario, given the market dominance that Meta has, that the government will probably need to consider.
Great footer for thought. So listen, let's wrap this up with one final question, which is probably some of you have pointed to it. It's coming, and it's coming fast and significant. AI and how this adds another layer of complexity to the news bargaining code and beyond. Michael, you've got News Corp's been very strong on this. What's your sense on the implications for AI, for the code, for publishers, Meta, Google, etc.?
I don't know, but the code didn't consider generative AI. And I think repurposing the code at this time would slow down the current process regarding the imbalanced bargaining power that the publishers have. There is a separate piece of work which I believe the government need to undertake, and it is urgent, and particularly for specialist media, whether you specialise in a particular business category, if you specialise in particularly reviewing restaurants, is that there is no doubt that your content has been scraped and is being used to train models to answer questions on what is the best restaurant, what is the best stock pick of the day. When you've trained your answer by amalgamating 4, 5, 6 different sources. I think the biggest one I've seen recently in the US is the Wirecutter Buyside, and a lot of the tried, tested,
well, that's the New York Times, isn't it? The Wirecutter
from trusted publishers on what products to buy is that the best, and these affiliate models and business and publishers such as Wired, published by Condé Nast, to do these reviews and test those reviews, when they all get amalgamated and that Amazon can say, here is the product you should buy for your specific need, and they don't source the fact that they've gone to 6, 7 different tested sites, and you can buy it with us now, we'll have it to you tonight. That once they've been trained, once you have access, then that is the rapid concern I feel for Australian specialist media who would not be necessarily in business due to a different way of search.
What's the way forward from News Corp's perspective on this? Is to wrap it into the code or to keep it separately and do something different?
Separate. I would not keep it. I think that there's a different issue here. It is using content differently. It's not a bargaining. It's not a competition issue. It's a use of content and building a business based on someone else's content.
I agree with that. I think it's way too complicated to try and wrap this up into the code. And it also goes way beyond the news media. It's not just us that are facing this. It's a copyright issue that stretches right across libraries, universities, academia, books. And there is work underway, but it's under, I think it's under a different minister. I think it's under the Attorney General. And I think, as Michael said, trying to put this into the code now, it would be make it even more complicated and challenging than it already is.
Chris Jans.
Well, I agree with Michael's thoughts on the implications of AI and also agree that there are different issues at play here. And it can quickly get lost how urgent this problem is and how quickly the industry is changing and the loss of funding that's going to be on our doorstep within months. There isn't the time that we've had in the past for long considered processes, but also anything that happens can't be with haste such that it doesn't consider unintended consequences or the broader media ecosystem.
Paul, I'll get to you in a sec. I just want a quick take from Will on this and AI separating out from the media code, the implications for your business. Some quick thoughts.
So I think AI, as I said at the beginning, is materially different to what we've been discussing so far. The reason why Google's staying in the bargaining code is that if you go to Google and you type in who won the tennis and it doesn't give you news, like news is a very, very substantial part of search. And I think it's even more substantial part of AI. As such, I think there is sort of a high degree of value exchange that is not currently recognized because of the way the market's currently set up. Obviously, we don't have a constitution in Australia. I'm not the Australian equivalent of a constitutional lawyer is, so I don't know the right way of creating the law to deal with it. But to me, prima facie, it seems like a kind of a copyright issue. And I mean, one of the few things I will speak very kindly of about, particularly News Corp, but also Nine, is I think this is really a retrospective issue as well. So it's not just looking forward. It's the years that many of these companies have been scraping these big media sites, training their models. So I think the government should act quickly, decisively, and do what it needs to recognize the value that these companies are extracting.
Paul, your thoughts quickly on this one in AI. Paul Fletcher.
My quick thought is that what would be useful would be to get a government agency, maybe it's the ACCC, to do a detailed piece of work that builds the factual case. That was so important to getting the outcome with the News Media Bargaining Code. I take Chris's point about time is a bit of a luxury here, but nevertheless, unless you can demonstrate, pull the evidence together, then it's much harder to make the case for policy intervention. So I do think being able to demonstrate that, you know, what the answers you get when you type something into ChatGPT coincidentally turn out to be blocks of text written by a journalist on this paper at this time, getting that evidence together will be important.
Final takeout from each of you or watchouts for what's coming in the next 3, 6, 12 months, starting with Michael, for the industry, for the broader business community and society, et cetera. Key core watchout or takeout for you, Michael, what's coming this year?
Key watchouts for the year ahead. The changing habits related to search and referrals across not just news media, but all industries. And that the ChatGPT and generative AI will change the way people discover. And that is not providing referrals to businesses. And so direct traffic, first-party data is key to a sustainable business. And that I'm not sure that Australians are ready for that. And Meta have a key role in the supply and the security of those audiences and those customers for Australian businesses. I think that is the biggest, call it the turnoff of cookies, which was going to impact many, and that those who are smart and ready will prosper. Others that are behind will need to be doing deals to retain the business that they've enjoyed.
Chris Jans, final thoughts?
Look, I think it's a challenging period ahead because of the amount of funding that's going to disappear from the ecosystem. And it is that balance between acting with urgency and getting the right long-term answer that is, I think, a real challenge for government right now. Any response needs to consider the broad ecosystem, the existing players, the emerging players, but a response is needed. We can't just cover our eyes and ears and pretend that this isn't happening.
And on that, we'll, maybe somewhere down the track, but, we didn't get to the impact on the P&Ls for media companies from Meta pulling out and what happens there, and nor did we get to really some detail on where News and Nine, we got a couple of hints on where that media bargaining code money has been invested in journalism, which is a shame, but we're out of time. So Will, final thoughts, watchouts for this year?
The government needs to move quickly to ensure that we don't see sort of fairly catastrophic outcomes from the news industry in Australia. We're seeing $70 million coming out in three and a bit months. So I think the government should be considering all ways that can help plug that gap. I think any future-looking schemes need to particularly address the issue of diversity. So I'm really pleased to hear the bigger players talk about the need for a more pluralistic market. And I think that's going to be critical to any future version of the code. And then finally, I would just encourage the government, all players, to act carefully. I'm concerned that I've come across as a cheerleader for big tech. That's certainly not the case. But I do think that there is a degree of brinkmanship going on right now. And if Meta is designated and it does decide to cut off news, that will be extremely bad, particularly for young Australians who are the biggest audience of news on social.
Paul Fletcher, final thoughts, watch outs for this year.
Over the last 10 plus years, probably longer, there's been a series of policy engagements by government dealing with the challenges facing the media sector. I think for the last year or two, that's been less of a focus, probably because of the kind of overhang effects of the News Media Bargaining Code. But I think it probably will attract more public policy focus, over the immediate period.
And to bring it home, Tory Maguire, just have your thoughts and then you can all go and actually do some work. But it's been a very instructive, helpful conversation. Your final thoughts, Tory?
You asked about the watch outs. From my perspective in our business, we have, having really honed the work that CJ started on building our subscription strategy, we've become very good at that. And it's now BAU for us. And so at this point, I have the smartest people in my business pointed with a laser-like focus at the issue that Michael raised, which is, where are we going to get new audiences when potentially there's no social media sending new audiences to publishers? Search becomes, it's on its way down anyway, regardless of what's happening with generative AI, and that will accelerate and continue. And we need to keep bringing new audiences in. And so we need all of our creativity and energy to be going into finding ways to get people to come to our sites, where we know we are now very good at making them stay and making them pay.
Michael Miller, Tory Maguire, Chris Janz, Will Hayward, Paul Fletcher. Really, really instructive conversation. And here's to the next 6-12 months of, if nothing else, at least from a journalist's perspective, looking at it. There's a little bit to cover and write. So thanks for joining, and we look forward to the what happens in the coming months. Thanks.
This MI3 audio edition was presented by Paul McIntyre. That's moi. Producer Nick Slater. Music by Matt Dwyer. For more episodes, go to listener.com or download the Listener app and search MI3 audio edition to listen for free. Listener.